Welcome, everybody, to the Class Act Podcast. I'm your host, Barry McCockiner, and it is Wednesday, December 19th, 2018, the year of our Lord. And, folks, the big story, for me at least personally, over the last 24 hours or so, has been that I got suspended. Well, I shouldn't say suspended. I got locked out of my Twitter account for 12 hours for a tweet that I made towards Eric Reed. Now, the tweet, which was in response to Eric Reed tweeting about how he got another random drug test. And I responded to it by saying, "This is what you deserve for disrespecting the flags and the troops. I hope you pee so hard into the cup that it hurts your wee-wee." Now, okay, I don't know, this is just mind-blowing to me, because Twitter is so fucking dumb. Twitter is so fucking fucked up. That's just what it is, okay? Twitter is such a fucked up place, and you can go on Twitter right now, and you can see verified accounts for convicted rapist Harvey Weinstein, Bill Cosby, Kobe Bryant, just the list goes on and on. But if you say one thing about some guy's wee-wee, you get a 12-hour penalty. For fuck's sake, I mean, a fucking video of a snake going up a person's asshole was retweeted onto my timeline earlier tonight and didn't get any punishment. But if you say wee-wee, that's crossing the line. I'm on like my 10th account now, and I still have no idea what I got suspended for any of my other accounts. I've tried to appeal. I've tried to, you know, respond. What am I getting suspended for? It's almost like that Tom Cruise movie, Edge of Tomorrow, where every time he dies, he has to start over, and he has to learn more and more about how to survive based on the previous time he died. And that's kind of what it's like for me when it comes to Twitter. Like, I don't know what I've gotten suspended for, but if I can't even say wee-wee, which I'm guessing is the reason why I got the locked out, I don't know what I could get locked out for. And it's just like, I'm just trying to have some fun on Twitter. I'm not trying to, you know, to harm anybody. But, you know, and then you hear a story about Jack, the Twitter Jack Dorsey, fucking sending his beard, like his shaved beard in an envelope, to Azalea Banks. Like, what the fuck is that shit? Like, what is going on here? Like, honestly, Twitter is incredibly successful in spite of the people that run it. Okay? Like, the only thing that Twitter's done, really the only good update that I can ever remember them doing, is expanding the character limit from 140 to 280. That's it. Everything else, it seems like it just makes it more and more fucked up. But I feel like I've bitched long enough. Let's get back to sports, because that's what I talk about on this podcast for a vast majority of the time. That's why you're listening to this podcast. And we're almost to the NFL playoffs, so the NFL is going to be talked about first. Okay, if you don't like it, that's too bad. Let's talk about one of the big stories. The big story over the last week in the NFL was that the New England Patriots lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Patriots actually lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Tom Brady was playing. Tom Brady was playing, and the Patriots, the New England Patriots, lost to the Steelers of Pittsburgh in an official NFL game in the regular season. That's incredible. That is ridiculous. And the entire time I was watching the game, I was saying, the Steelers are going to find a way to fuck this up. And they nearly did. Because the game started out like it was going to be a shootout. It looked like Tom Brady was going to throw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns when he threw that opening drive touchdown pass to Chris Hogan, which an 80-year-old geriatric could have made. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go again. Steelers are going to get their ass kicked. And it turned out to be a defensive struggle, which we all know Ben Roethlisberger really, really is at his best in defensive struggles. And, you know, the Steeler offense kind of halted. They missed a field goal. They had multiple chances to extend the lead. They went up early, 14-7. They had multiple chances to. And then Tom Brady, at the end of the game, really just shit his pants. I mean, he basically just shit his pants. He threw a horrible interception. He threw a couple completely inaccurate throws to the end zone. Gronkowski isn't even 30 years old yet, but he looks like he's completely gone. He looks like he's completely washed. And, you know, I know I joke about it. I know I joke about Tom Brady's age, and the joke is, oh, Tom Brady's 41. But, you know, the thing is that everybody now is acting like, oh, God, Patriots dynasty is over with, and oh, they're, how are they going to recover from this? And, oh, my goodness gracious. People need to take a step back and shut the fuck up, okay? The Patriots are still 9-5, okay? The Texans are 10-4. The Chiefs and Chargers are both 11-3. Now, what's most likely to happen is that either the Chiefs or the Chargers will end up with the one seed, okay? Now, the Texans have a one-game lead over the Patriots, and the Patriots have the tiebreaker. So Texans 10-4, Patriots 9-5. As everybody knows who's followed the NFL with any common sense, if the Texans lose one of their last two games and New England wins out, which New England is going to win out, then the Texans will be a wild card team and the Patriots will get the two seed in a first round bye. So everyone's like, oh, is the Patriots dynasty over with? No, it's not over, okay? They're most likely going to get a first round bye again, okay? And there's a good chance that even if they do get the two seed, there's a good chance that either the Chargers or the Chiefs, knowing their histories, are going to shit their pants in the divisional round. So there's still a very good chance that the Patriots are going to get to play two home games in the playoffs. Now, the thing is you're like, oh, well, they still have two more games left. Their last two games are at home against the Jets and the Bills. And I've looked up the numbers. Since 2003, the Patriots have played 14 home games in December against AFC East opponents, divisional opponents. In those 14 games, the Patriots' defense has given up 8.7 points per game. 8.7. That's better than the 2000 Ravens, okay? Who are considered by many to be probably the greatest defense of all time. So when AFC East teams go into Foxborough in December, they completely shit their pants and they completely forget how to play football. So, and trust me, don't blame me if I'm cautious about Josh Allen and Sam Darnold, who are two rookies who are statistically two of the worst quarterbacks in the league, are going to go into Foxborough and beat the Patriots. It's not going to happen. The Patriots are going to win their final two games. They're going to end up 11-5. And I don't trust the Texans to win out, because why should I trust the Texans? Their franchise has been around for 16 years or 17 years now, and they've never made a conference championship game. Okay, Bill O'Brien is, you know, he's an okay coach. He's nothing special. But for me, as an Eagles fan, I'm an Eagles fan, and I absolutely despise the Patriots, as everybody who follows me knows. So this week, the Texans are going to play at the Eagles. So it's kind of like a catch-22 for me. If the Eagles win, I'll be obviously happy because it's the Eagles, it's my team. But if the Eagles win, that means that the Texans lose, and that means that the Patriots get a first-round bye. So the thing is that everything sucks. Everything sucks in life, and you just have to accept it and suck it up and just move on. But that's getting a little bit too deep for this podcast. I'm not, you know, I don't get paid to do that shit, so I'm not going to go into it. But the fact of the matter is that the Patriots, even in their worst years, get bailed out by playing in a horrible division. The Three Stooges, the Bills, the Dolphins, and the Jets, never give the Patriots any sort of run or push for the division title. And you're going to see that in full effect when the Patriots finish 11-5 this year, despite a 3-5 record on the road. Really, the Patriots have been horrible on the road this year. They've been really horrible. I mean, their road wins have come against Josh McCown. Who else? Josh McCown, Mitch Trubisky, who is a bad QB on a great defensive team. And the third one, I'm trying to think here. I'm sorry I'm drawing a blank, but the third quarterback they've beaten on the road. Oh, of course, the legendary Derek Anderson. So to recap, their three road wins this year have come against Derek Anderson, Josh McCown, and Mitch Trubisky. So the Patriots are a very, very vulnerable road team. But for me, I am never going, like, all the talk of, oh, it's the Patriots dynasty over with, it has to stop. It has to stop because it's not like they're 3-10 or 3-11 and they're missing the playoffs. They still have a great chance of getting a first round bye. So all that shit needs to stop. In my heart of hearts, I believe, as it currently stands, you know, there could be some major injuries that happened in the last 2 weeks of the season that may change the picture. But for me, I still think if the Patriots get to play two home games, they're going to go to the Super Bowl. And my heart of heart, knowing Tom Brady's luck, because Tom Brady has had a magic horseshoe stuck up his ass for his entire career, I think the Patriots are going to make the Super Bowl. I really do. I think that either Kansas City or the Chargers is going to shit their pants in the divisional round. Because, hey, the Chargers' home field, this is the other thing. The Chargers' home field advantage, so to speak, quote-unquote, isn't even a home field advantage. It's like the worst home field in the entire league. If you go and you watch a Chargers game on TV, it's basically like an away game. The fact that the Chargers have 11 wins, despite playing essentially 16 road games, is nothing short of a miracle. Okay? So, if the Chargers do get the one seed, and they even if they do win the divisional round, and they do have to host the Patriots, it'll be probably like the worst home and field advantage you could ever possibly find in a conference championship game, ever. But I'm going a little bit too deep in hypotheticals here. When in doubt, I'm going to choose Brady's luck over anything because, like, 95% of the time, Tom Brady always gets bailed out. Like, one of the 5% of the times he didn't get bailed out was, like, on the Miami Lateral Miracle a few weeks ago. That's, like, one of the rare times in his entire career I can say Tom Brady legitimately got the short end of the stick. But you know what? Enough about the AFC. Let's go to the NFC. The big story is how the Saints are looking like they're going to be the one seed with home field advantage, and the Rams are really slumping. Jared Goff is playing like complete dog shit over the last 3 weeks or so, and the Rams look really vulnerable while the Saints... although, I will say Drew Brees has been playing like dog shit too lately. It's just that his defense has been really great for the first time in really a long time. You can say that the Saints' defense is actually carrying Drew Brees. I don't know if you could say that before, but after so many years of Drew Brees putting up great numbers on horrible defensive teams, this is kind of like poetic justice in a way, because by golly was Drew Brees awful on Monday night at Carolina. Drew Brees was awful. Drew Brees has had some really, really shitty, poor road performances, and that's kind of, and you know, I know that the main MVP talk now, it's Brees and Mahomes still, and now people are starting to say, what about Philip Rivers? To me, I think it's obviously still Mahomes. I think Mahomes should be the clear-cut runner, barring some, you know, zero touchdown, five interception game in the last 2 weeks here. Or some, you know, historical level meltdown statistically over the last 2 weeks. I think Mahomes is going to be the MVP, and he should be the MVP because his defense, the Chiefs defense, is horrible. But Drew Brees, over his last four games, I'm looking at the stats right now, he's averaging 175 passing yards a game. So, you know, his defense has really, really come to life to help him. But I think if the Saints are able to get home field advantage for the playoffs, I think that they're going to go to the Super Bowl. I can't see any team going into the Superdome and beating the Saints, just because the Saints just, Drew Brees, especially in the Superdome, you go in the regular season, especially in the playoffs, he's just a different animal there. And that's why a lot of the, when people say, oh, I know this year's kind of been weird because, you know, it seems like now because Aaron Rodgers has had a down year in Green Bay, it seems like the, you know, the Saints fans and the Drew Brees fans are very vocal about, oh, Brees is better. Brees is better than Rodgers all time. And you know, it's like, let's slow down here. Drew Brees, Hall of Fame quarterback, first ballot Hall of Famer, but he's not better than Aaron Rodgers. I don't care what you say. He's not better than Aaron Rodgers. Okay. I don't care if Aaron Rodgers having a down year. He's not better than Drew Brees is not better than Aaron Rodgers. That said, yeah, I think the thing about Drew Brees is that at home he's nearly unstoppable, but on the road he's very, very mortal. He's very, very mortal on the road, and this year has really done no different. And that's why I think that he doesn't deserve the MVP because of some really subpar road performances. And to reiterate to another point, the quarterback that he was playing against on Monday night, Cam Newton, has for the life of me, I can't understand why so many people think Cam Newton is an elite QB. Because if you want to say Cam Newton is the greatest running quarterback of all time, I completely understand why. But here's the facts. He's Andy Dalton with muscles. Okay? He's Andy Dalton with muscles. You put up his career stats next to Andy Dalton's career passing stats, they are nearly identical. Nearly identical. And this isn't some small sample size. This is like 8 years worth of sample size. And the even more interesting thing is that they both had their peak years in the same year, 2015. Besides the second half of the 2015 season, Cam Newton has never played like an elite quarterback in the NFL. In fact, I would go as far to say that he sucks at passing. And I know all the excuses come out. Oh, he's had bad coaches. He's had bad receivers. He has no weapons. Blah, blah, he's injured. Blah, 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 blah. Okay? If you say that, you could say that for a guy like Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers has earned the benefit of the doubt because he's the highest-rated passer in NFL history. Cam Newton doesn't deserve that benefit of the doubt because he's never shown us that he can be an elite passer over a prolonged period of time, like multiple seasons worth. He has never done that. And the fact that he seems to get this treated like an elite quarterback because he won an MVP with passing stats that weren't even the best of that season. Carson Palmer should have won the MVP in 2015, but that's a debate for another day. I just don't get it with Cam Newton. I just don't get the whole, oh, he's an elite quarterback thing. He's overrated. He stinks. He stinks as a passer. He stinks as a passer. His offenses, I'm looking it up right now, he's been in the league for 8 years. His offenses have finished, I'm going in points right now. His rookie year, they finished fifth in points a game. That's good. The next 2 years, they finished 18th. 2014, 19th in points a game. 2015, his MVP year, first. Okay. Last 3 years, 15th in points, 12th in points, 15th in points. Certain, only two times in 8 years, Cam Newton has led an offense to top 10 in points a game. I'm sorry, but that's just not an elite quarterback. And I know it's a team game, I understand that, but besides one half of a season, Cam Newton has never shown that he can be an elite quarterback. That's just the facts. And if you can't handle it, there's the door. I'm sorry, but that's just the facts. And I briefly mentioned my Eagles before. And the interesting dilemma about the Eagles is the Nick Foles dilemma again. Because, you know, the Nick Foles, Carson Wentz thing. Now, I would be beyond ecstatic, believe me, if Big Dick Nick was able to somehow lead the Eagles back into the playoffs and on another magical Super Bowl run. I would literally eat my own shit out of joy. I don't even know if that doesn't even make sense, but I would just be so ecstatic if that happened. At some point, though, like, it's almost getting really awkward for Carson Wentz because everybody loves Carson Wentz. But even as an Eagles fan, on Sunday night, it was like when Nick Foles was out there, you could tell it seemed like the team had more life to it. And I think Carson Wentz is a better quarterback than Nick Foles. But Carson Wentz is younger. He's shown that he can be productive. And Nick Foles is basically shown that he's very streaky and he's able to go on. You know, he had one of the greatest postseason runs ever last year, but he's never been able to really sustain that over multiple seasons. But, you know, with Carson Wentz becoming increasingly injury-prone, like, it is awkward. It is awkward as an Eagles fan. You're like, well, like, if Nick Foles were to somehow, you know, these last couple weeks, and if all the you know, balances go the Eagles' way and they do make the playoffs with Nick Foles, it's like, well, I mean, how much longer, how much more do we have to see until we recognize, oh, we might be better off with Nick Foles instead of Carson Wentz? Now, look, the Eagles aren't going to release Carson Wentz, and they shouldn't, okay? Because for all we know, knowing Nick Foles' history, he could go out there and play like complete shit over the last 2 weeks of the season. But it is awkward as an Eagles fan to know that, you know, it seems like the team looks better. It seems like the team has more energy when Nick Foles is out there, even though Carson Wentz is the better quarterback. Now, if the Eagles lose to the Texans and they get eliminated from the playoffs, this means absolutely nothing, and Carson Wentz is going to go back to being the quarterback of the future. But if the Eagles go on some miracle 2011 Giants type of run with Nick Foles in there, it's like, Carson, you got to pack your bags, buddy, because we're not benching a quarterback that led us to two Super Bowls. It's not going to happen. But that's a pipe dream right now. I can't really remember another situation like this in NFL history. I'm talking about where a team has a quarterback that's obviously good, and despite what some people may say, you know, the jokes about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is a very good quarterback. And he's young. At least, you know, he's 26, which is kind of old for a guy who's not even in his fourth year yet, but he's still young. It's very rare for a team that has a very good young quarterback to ask for a team's fan base to be like, well, do we need somebody else? The only other example that I can think of in NFL history of this is Joe Montana and Steve Young before Steve Young won a Super Bowl from the Niners as a starter. Like, if this was in the social media era, I can't even imagine the nightmare Steve Young would have had to go through, because in 92, I know this is like a history lesson for people who might not know, in 1992, Steve Young won MVP. But Joe Montana, who in his last season as a healthy starter for the 49ers in 1990 won MVP, got hurt, missed the entire 1991 season, and was healthy enough at the end of the 92 season. So the Niners had to choose between this young hotshot guy, Steve Young, who just won MVP, or Joe Montana. And in the playoffs, you know, Joe Montana, four Super Bowls as a starter, like the best Super Bowl quarterback of all time, was benched for Steve Young. So that's really the only other parallel that I can think of in NFL history with this Carson Wentz, Nick Foles situation. Like, Jeff Hostetler, Phil Simms, that was like a different thing, but it's similar. But, you know, Phil Simms was never really an elite quarterback like Carson Wentz has shown he can be. But this is just more of a ranting for me. I'm an Eagles fan ranting. It doesn't mean anything, but that's the only comparison I can really think of. And for Carson Wentz, I mean, the only way Carson Wentz is going to get people, this is why I feel bad for him. Like, everybody else in Philadelphia was ecstatic, and every Philadelphia Eagles fan was absolutely ecstatic that we broke the Super Bowl curse last year. And I know Carson Wentz seems like a really good guy, and he seems like he's very humble and down to earth. But I know that deep down inside, he's like, oh, fuck. Now, if I don't win a Super Bowl for the rest of my career, the only thing I could go and put up, and I said this before in the podcast, Carson Wentz can go on to have throw for 60,000 yards and 500 touchdowns, but if he doesn't win another Super Bowl, what are people going to say? Oh, your team won a Super Bowl without you. Like, you know, it's like with Dan Marino. Dan Marino retired with every single major passing record, was widely regarded as the best pure passer in NFL history, but he never won a Super Bowl. Like, that caveat is there. So I hope, as an Eagles fan and for Carson Wentz's sake, that he's able to win a Super Bowl as a starter for the Eagles, so all of his haters and detractors can stop shitting on him. It was also interesting how the Dallas Cowboys last Sunday got shut out. They scored 0 points. Zero. Zilch. Nada. And they were playing all of their starters. Okay? They got shut out while playing all of their starters. That you just hate to see that. You know what else you hate to see? The fact that the Dallas Cowboys are on national television almost every fucking week, despite not playing in a conference championship game since Bill Clinton's first term as president. The Dallas Cowboys are the most overrated franchise in professional sports. The most overrated in any major professional sport. the Dallas Cowboys the most overrated franchise. And I don't give a fuck they have a bunch of fans. That makes it even worse, okay? If you're a Cowboys fan and you're under the age of 35, you have absolutely no right to talk about Super Bowls because you weren't even around to remember the last Super Bowl, okay? Those are just the facts. Those are the facts, okay? You might not like it. It might seem harsh. You might hate me, but that's the truth, okay? You guys have 3 playoff wins over the last 22 years. 3, okay? The Eagles had 3 playoff wins last year alone, okay? So, and I know Cowboys fans are just so obnoxious. They're like, Cowboys fans have the cockiness of Patriots fans without anywhere near the same amount of success recently. Like, I despise Patriots fans, but I can understand where their arrogance comes from because they win like 12 games every year almost. They're guaranteed. They've made the conference championship game like 8 straight years. So I can see where their arrogance comes from. But with Cowboys fans, they live so far off the past. It's ridiculous. And every single time the Cowboys lose, I am so happy to see it. I am so happy to see it. And I hope the Cowboys choke their last 2 games. And I hope the Eagles win and they finish 9-7 and win the NFC East. Because that's just poetic justice. Because the Cowboys deserve nothing. And that's just the truth. Most overrated franchise in sports. I'm sick of every single time the Cowboys are on national television, which is basically like every week. I am sick of having the fucking cameras pan to Jerry Jones's corpse in the press box every week. It pans to Jerry Jones's corpse in the fucking press box. It's disgusting. It makes me puke. I've thrown up multiple times from it. I don't really like to talk about it that much, but that's just the truth. It's disgusting, and I cannot wait until... Well, I don't even know. I hope the Cowboys continue this long stretch of mediocrity that they've been on for the last 22 years, the last 2 decades plus. I hope they continue that forever because it's so awesome to see them lose and it's so awesome to see them choke. And I would not be surprised, based on their history, if they choke these last 2 games and finish at 8-8 and miss the playoffs. Let's talk a little about the NBA here. I mean, we're almost in the dog days of the NBA where it's mid-December. And it's not really close enough to the playoffs yet, but it's not towards the beginning of the season where everybody's fresh, so it's kind of the dog days of the NBA season. But I don't know if I've talked about this before. I'm pretty sure I have, but the NBA, and I feel the urge and the need. Excuse me. I feel the need to bring this up periodically because it has to be said. The NBA sucks. And I still watch it anyway because I'm a fucking loser. But that's not the point. The point is that the NBA, it sucks. It sucks. Everybody knows who's going to win. Everybody knows who's going to win. And if you're one of those people that says, oh, you just got to try to enjoy the stuff in the regular season, even though we know the Warriors are going to win. Get the fuck out of here with that bullshit, okay? I watch sports, and I know for a fact I've said this before. I watch sports to be entertained. I watch sports for the suspense, for the competition, okay? And the Warriors have made a fucking mockery of it, okay? And, like, it's hard, like... And this might be because I'm just sour grapes because I'm a LeBron fan and the Warriors have basically cheated LeBron out of more rings. But it just sucks to see a team get rewarded for taking the easiest possible way out. There's something about that that just rubs me wrong. And I know it rubs a lot of other people wrong. But, and for the life of me, I cannot understand why more people in the national media don't call the Warriors out on this shit. And specifically, I don't understand why Steph Curry has gotten such a pass. And I understand Kevin Durant. I understand Kevin Durant got the most of the criticism for... I know he got most of the criticism and most of the blame, most of the hate for his move to Golden State. And that's all deserved. Kevin Durant's a bitch. And he ruined the NBA. But, and I know I've talked about this before, but I need to bring it up again because I hate it when the media fawns over particular athletes, and they have these guys like Steph Curry, like Dwayne Wade back when he was in his prime, and you go back to the NFL, you got guys like Tom Brady. Just there's just these athletes who get these narratives attached to them that just they're just media darlings, and they never get any criticism, and they get labeled as leaders and team players, and it's just so nauseating. And again, Steph Curry, I feel the need to bring this up. I have to say that again. I feel the need to re-bring this up because every fucking day, as a LeBron fan, I get told about the 2011 finals and LeBron's 6 finals losses. That's a two-way street. If you're gonna hate LeBron, which the vast majority of people who hate LeBron are either teams that LeBron has beaten in the postseason, which includes the Warriors, or Warriors fans or people who aren't Warriors fans but just hate LeBron because he's threatened Michael Jordan's legacy, and they tolerate the Warriors because the Warriors prevent LeBron from winning more rings. Steph Curry had probably the greatest regular season of all time in 2016. And he gets no slander, no criticism. Nobody questions Steph Curry for trying to recruit Kevin Durant, not even 2 weeks after he committed one of the biggest chokes in NBA Finals history. Nobody. It never gets brought up in the media. Never. Ever. To this day, LeBron James gets shit on for his 2011 Finals. And I'm not saying that LeBron doesn't deserve to get docked for his 2011 Finals performance. I'm not saying that. But, you know, it's a different standard for LeBron. And, like, that's why I laugh when people try and say, oh, well, this player is better than LeBron. No, he's not. You know why he's not better? Because nobody gets held to a higher standard than LeBron. It's hypocritical of you to hold LeBron to a higher standard than any other player, but say there's a player better than LeBron. Like, it should be self-evident. It should be self-evident. But, and I know, oh, you're just saying, oh, you're such a LeBron fanboy. Well, you know, why shouldn't I be a LeBron fanboy? Why shouldn't I be? The guy is arguably the best basketball player of all time. If you want to say Michael Jordan's the best basketball player of all time, I'm not going to disagree with you, because Michael Jordan was ridiculous, even though he played against plumbers. But he was ridiculous, and he would have dominated in any era. But for the longest time, I've never understood why LeBron got so much visceral hate. Because this isn't a guy like Floyd Mayweather who beat the shit out of women or had domestic violence problems. LeBron, like, he's never done anything to warrant so much hatred, except, now this is a big exception, except threaten Michael Jordan's legacy. And I learned this as time went on. I kept asking myself, why do people hate LeBron so much? Is it for, like, they said for years, oh, it's the way he handled the decision. All right, he goes to Miami for 4 years, wins a couple rings. He comes back to Cleveland, the team that he left in the decision. He comes back to Cleveland. He wins a ring for Cleveland. And still people hated on him. And I was like, well, okay, well, you can't hate on him for the decision anymore, because he literally, voluntarily, went back to the same team that he left that you hated him for leaving. And he won a ring for them. So what could it be now? Well, it has to be the fact that people hold on to Michael Jordan as the greatest of all time. And they nitpick, and they nitpick, and they nitpick, and they try and blame LeBron for everything. Hell, even last night, in last night's game against Brooklyn, LeBron had 36 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists. Now, I don't care who you are, and the LeBron haters always say, oh, you just read the box score, you're just a stat whore, you don't care about watching the game, okay? Give me a fucking break, okay? You do not put up 36, 13, and 8 on 13 to 23 shooting by stat padding. Okay, the game was a close game. The Lakers lost. What did you see on Twitter? People saying games like that are what separate LeBron from Jordan and Kobe. Just the killer instinct, which is the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. And I've been saying this for years. Killer instinct is one of the dumbest things of all time. It's one of the dumbest media narratives. It is one of the most aggravating and obnoxious things that you can say. Okay? Kobe Bryant is nowhere close to LeBron James as a basketball player. Nowhere close. None. Nowhere close. Okay? And it's been this way for like 15 years with LeBron. So, for me, I'm a guy that LeBron has had to earn everything. Okay, LeBron has had to earn everything. Now, I know that sounds kind of dumb because you're like, what are you talking about? LeBron's this 6'8", 260-pound. He won the genetic lottery. And I don't disagree with that. But as I said before, players, like, there's so many examples of players who were so incredibly physically gifted that amounted to nothing. And for years, I've never understood why LeBron got so criticized. Because the guy has put up year after year after year for a decade and a half. Kids who were born when his career started are able to drive cars now. Okay? That's ridiculous. And the entire time, during that entire span, LeBron has been a top five player at worst. At worst. For a decade and a half. That is insane. Michael Jordan only played 11 healthy seasons with the Bulls. Okay? LeBron's had 15 straight elite seasons. That is ridiculous. That is absolutely ridiculous. And has LeBron done some things and said some things that come off as a little bit douchey and cocky and arrogant? Sure. But guess who else did? Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan, as everybody knows, used to punch teammates in practice. He was a complete dick. Go ahead and read The Jordan Rules by Sam Smith, okay? It'll change your outlook on Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan is lucky, and Michael Jordan, between cigar puffs, needs to thank his lucky stars that he did not play in the social media era. Because, boy, I'm telling you, the way he used to rag on teammates, the way he used to go to Atlantic City between playoff games, if he thought the media coverage about that in the early 90s was bad, he wouldn't have been able to get away with that shit nowadays. So the fact that LeBron is doing all the shit that he's done under such a heavy, intense microscope, it's just, I've never seen anything like it. And I don't think we'll ever see another player like LeBron again. And LeBron, in a tragic way, really is like the Wilt Chamberlain, and I've said this before, is like the Wilt Chamberlain of this generation. Both LeBron and Wilt were athletic freaks who put up incredible statistics, but a lot of people degraded them for not winning more. And the reason why they didn't win more was largely because, you know, it applies more to Wilt because Wilt actually did see a decrease in play when it came to the postseason, as opposed to LeBron, whose postseason stats are still ridiculously excellent. The reason why Wilt and LeBron didn't win more rings is because they ran into dynasties. Like, they're the reason why. Like, sometimes you just lose to a better team. And the reason why LeBron and Wilt have guys who are, like I said, were considered physical freaks, you know, statistical dynamos, put up amazing stats, but they get trashed for not winning more. It's because they ran into dynasties. Wilt ran into the Celtics. LeBron ran into the Spurs. And then later on, the Warriors. I mean, that's just the luck of the draw. Whereas a guy like Michael Jordan, in the 90s, he got to play an old Lakers team whose best player had HIV. He got to play a Portland Trailblazers team whose second best player was Terry Porter. He got to play a Phoenix Suns team that played no defense. He got to play a Supersonics team whose second best player was Sean Kemp. And then he got to play Utah Jazz teams who were led by Karl Malone, who was a notorious choker, and John Stockton, who in nearly 17,000 career NBA games never scored 35 points. Okay? Compare that to LeBron, who has to play against a team, the Warriors, who have three guys that can put up 50 points a game on any given night. Okay? That's just ridiculous. That's ridiculous. The comparison is not, or compare that to the Spurs, the Duncan Spurs teams with prime Duncan, prime Ginobili, prime Tony Parker, Popovich, who is considered, you know, arguably the greatest coach of all time besides Phil Jackson, who was Michael Jordan's coach, by the way, and LeBron has never had a great coach like Michael Jordan was afforded with Phil Jackson. It's just, it's the luck of the draw. And That's one of the things I hate most about sports, especially team sports, is that people are not able to, a lot of people are not able to differentiate. They're not able to apply context to situations. They look at just the end result without analyzing the events that led to that end result. Okay, it's one thing to, if you want to say like LeBron played horrible in the 2011 finals and he was the reason why his team lost, I can agree with that. And if you want to hold him accountable, if you want to say that's a black mark on LeBron's legacy, I agree. But there's people that constantly bring up, he has 6 finals losses, 3-6 finals record, without applying any context to it, or without applying how LeBron's teammates played, or who LeBron's teammates were, or LeBron's teammates getting injured, or a 73-win team adding Kevin Durant. Like, there's much more context that goes into these things than the vast majority of people are willing to apply. So that's, I think LeBron is a big victim of that, where when it comes to the people, when it comes to people degrading him, they're not willing to look at, they're not willing to, either they're uninformed and they just don't know enough, or they're not willing to take the time to actually give a reasonable or a rational evaluation of LeBron's career. And to me, LeBron's finals record being 3-6 is probably one of the worst tragedies in sports, because he's like that. That's going to be with him for for the rest of his career. It's like the Buffalo Bills of the 90s. The Buffalo Bills of the 90s were one field goal away from being considered one of the greatest runs in NFL history. But nobody gives a shit that they won 4 straight conference championships. Nobody gives a shit. The only thing they talk about is they lost 4 straight Super Bowls. And that's kind of, you know, what LeBron is turning into. Like, you had to, without the end result, obviously might not be as good as you want, but that doesn't mean it's LeBron's fault. So it's just one of my pet peeves, another one of my pet peeves with watching sports. And I try to tell myself, you know, I try to tell myself sports are a lot more enjoyable when you just are able to accept that the vast majority of sports fans are complete morons. But especially when you're on Twitter a lot like I am, it's hard to not come across people who are idiots and people who spread false narratives and people who spread all these, you know, these media quotes and these media, you know, narratives like, you know, Killer Instinct and Clutch Gene and, oh, fuck, I felt good. You know, just all this annoying shit. Folks, I think I have to change my underwear. I think I ruined my pants on that last one. And we're back. What was I saying before I shit my pants? Something about LeBron. Who gives a fuck anyway? Jeez, this podcast is running long. This is the longest podcast I think I've ever done. Usually I'm around 25 minutes or so. Now I'm already close to 45 minutes. I guess I have a lot to say. Well, you know, I really enjoy doing this podcast, and it's, you know, I'm hoping that if you've made it this long into the podcast, that you're probably a dedicated listener. But I hope that, you know, you guys can give the podcast a 5-star review. I'm very, very thankful for all of my fans, despite all the joking, despite all the trolling. I really do appreciate all the support and all the fans I get, and you know, seeing people are able getting to, you know, the inside jokes and people getting along with the jokes, and you know, it's really enjoyable to interact with a lot of people who are especially in on all the jokes I do and all the dumb shit. I mean, because I say a lot of dumb, stupid shit that doesn't make any sense, and it really shouldn't be funny. But I'm very grateful that so many people out there are able to see my sense of humor. I also know that there are a lot of people out there that want to see me die a painful death, and I understand that. But that just kind of speaks more to how successful my trolling is. But again, I want to thank you guys all for supporting me, and I'm hoping to start selling some t-shirts soon, once I get that set up. And you know, I'm just very, very thankful for all your help and support. And if, like I said, if you can give a if you can go to iTunes and give the podcast a 5-star review, that would be very appreciated. On that note, stay classy and respect the troops.
Folks, I'd like to sing a song about the American dream. About me. About you. About the way our American hearts beat way down in the bottom of our chests. About that special feeling we get in the cockles of our hearts. Maybe below the cockles. Maybe in the subcockle area. Maybe in the liver. Maybe in the kidneys. Maybe even in the colon. We don't know. I'm just a regular Joe with a regular job. I'm your average white suburbanite slob. I like football and porno and books about war. I got an average house with a nice hardwood floor. My wife and my job, my kids and my car. My feet on my table and a Cuban cigar. But sometimes that just ain't enough to keep a man like me interested.
Oh no,
no way, No, I've gotta go out and have fun at someone else's expense.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah. I drive really slow in the ultra-fast lane while people behind me are going insane. Toilets and I piss on the seat. I walk around in the summertime saying, how about this heat? I'm an ecto, yo, 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 yo. I'm an ecto, yo, yo, yo. Sometimes I park in handicapped spaces while handicapped people make handicapped faces. I'm an ecto, yo. And raving and carrying on. Maybe they're right when they tell me I'm wrong. A 1967 Cadillac Eldorado convertible, hot pink with whale skin hubcaps and all leather cow interior and big brown baby seal eyes for headlights. Yeah! And I'm gonna drive around in that baby at 115 miles per hour, getting 1 mile per gallon, sucking down quarter pound of cheeseburgers from McDonald's in the old-fashioned non-biodegradable styrofoam containers. And when I'm done sucking down those greaseball burgers, I'm gonna wipe my mouth with the American flag, and then I'm gonna toss the styrofoam containers right out the side, and there ain't a goddamn thing anybody can do about it. You know why? Because we got the bomb, that's why. Two words, nuclear fucking weapons, okay? Russia, Germany, Romania, they can have all the democracy they want. They can have a big democracy cakewalk right through the middle of Tiananmen Square, and it won't make a lick of difference because we got the bombs, okay? John Wayne's not dead. He's frozen. And as soon as we find a cure for cancer, we're gonna thaw out the Duke, and he's gonna be pretty pissed off. You know why? Have you ever taken a cold shower? We'll multiply that by 15 million times. That's how pissed off the Duke's gonna be. I'm gonna get the Duke and John Cassavetes and Lee Marvin and Sam Peckinpah and a case of whiskey and drive down to Texas.
Hey, you know, you really are an asshole.
Why don't you just shut up and sing this song, pal? I'm an asshole.